discerninghearts.com, and Spirit Catholic Radio, in cooperation with the Pope Paul VI Institute, presents Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Dr. Hilgers, after being deeply touched by the teachings of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, founded the Pope Paul VI Institute for the Study of Human Reproduction in Omaha, Nebraska. Dr. Hilgers, along with his co-workers, developed the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. He would go on to discover Napro technology. In 1994, Pope John Paul II appointed him to full membership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. And with his wife Susan, Dr. Hilgers serves on the Pontifical Council for the Family. Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Dr. Hilgers, Sue, welcome.
Great to be here.
Yeah, great to see you, Chris. Thank you for having us.
We're going to talk today about some very important issues dealing with sexuality. And there really are two different camps of thought, aren't there, Dr. Hilgers?
Well, if you really look at the culture, there's probably only one sort of way of looking at this, and it's what we call a genitocentric view. We are genitally focused in our view of human sexuality. Mm-hmm. Culturally, television, movies, whatever it is, when you talk about sex or sexuality, it always revolves around intercourse, some sort of physical action or activity. So it's really, to a great extent, one-sided right now. But there are other views that really need to be explored because and amplified right now. We call it more of a cerebrocentric view of human sexuality because cerebrocentric means it is brain-centered, and it basically says that the brain is the primary sexual organ in the human person, and we're created male and female, but we're totally male and we're totally female. We're not just body parts or private parts, female and male, and we have to get away from all of that because it stifles us. It is, it's like a genital tyranny that we've involved ourselves in over these many years now. You know, we've talked about these terrible trends in the healthcare of women and children and families. That's the after effect of all of this. This is the litany of victims that have been laid out in front of us as a result of this so-called sexual revolution that started 50 or 60 years ago. It's really nothing but a genital revolution. It's very short-sighted when it comes to real sexuality. And ultimately, it's sexually retarded. If you want to just talk very objectively about it, you can just see what's happened over these many years. It's absolutely necessary for us to look at this from a different point of view and to get that point of view out to others so they can think about it as well.
It's not a sexual revolution per se, because revolutions sometimes are undertaken for something better, to try to establish a good. When I think of a sexual revolution, I think of actually those people back around the turn of the century where Margaret Sanger and a number of that whole crowd that believed in sexual freedom, and all it's really brought is sexual tyranny.
That's all it is. It's a physical form of tyranny, enslavement, which I think is a really good word. See, we've talked about sexual liberation or sexual freedom, but it's not authentic. It's an enslavement. It is truly sexually retarding. So long as we stay in that, we're going to just continue to have this litany of victims that have strewn the highway of sexuality over these last 30 or 40 years.
And it really has resulted in the damage of the family, hasn't it, Sue?
Without question, if you look at, for instance, the divorce rates, the single-parent families, you know, there's so many women who are raising the children all by themselves because of divorce, or maybe they were never married to begin with. I can speak as a woman. I think every woman who wants to be loved for her lifetime, that's really what's on her heart. And every woman is trying to be loved and not to have a guy leave her or to divorce her or to cheat on her. But how do you ensure that? How do you make sure that that will not happen? And I think until we have, as Tom's already pointed out, a different approach to how we view our sexuality, it's just going to keep going on. In other words, when a woman just freely gives of her body without any commitment and thinking that's how she's going to really connect with someone and he's going to love her, that is so short-sighted and it's incomplete. When we talk about our sexuality and we talk about it from a complete point of view in that we're not only looking at the physical component, but also the non-genital physical, the spiritual, the emotional, the psychological. And unfortunately, in our culture today, couples default to the physical genital. And that's where they expect this lifetime bond to be established. But a couple typically cannot make it through all the ups and downs of a relationship if they're only glued together physically. If they can't communicate on different levels, if they can't love on different levels, it's very, very difficult, I believe, for a relationship to make it for the long haul. And that's what women want. And we believe that if we can educate people about what their true sexuality is all about so they don't make these mistakes and buy into the culture's mantra of this so-called sexual freedom, that they will be able to have it different for themselves.
It's very dangerous, isn't it, Dr. Helders, to be surround your life and make your life goal something that satisfies just the flesh? I mean, it very much is a very surface-centered gratification, ultimately.
Yeah, and ultimately that's one of its major flaws, is because if you look at human relationships, particularly a marriage relationship with commitment such as it is, there's hardly any marriage that lasts in a way that's strong and bonded when it's only founded on a physical relationship. It has to explore the entire person. You have to love the entire person. You have to be loved by the person for who you are as an entire person. And that's what builds communication. That's what builds communion. That's what builds the strength of the relationship. We talked in a previous segment of marital bonding. That's what really allows for the marriage to be secured, like sort of super glue where it can't be broken. But only if you have sort of a full spectrum view, a whole person view would probably be the best way to phrase it. If you look at the whole person as the person you love, not just a component of that person. Otherwise, we're just led around by our genital organs, basically, and the whole thing flies up in smoke, and it has been for the last 45 years. And when you go back to Margaret Sanger, you go back historically in a period of time when our overall understanding in these things wasn't really all that great. People hadn't given a lot of thought to all of this stuff. Not that they shouldn't have, maybe, but they didn't. We remember, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have communication. We had some newspapers. There was no television. There was no radio, hardly, back then. There wasn't that need to have a universal way of viewing human sexuality, except that maybe the physical was something everybody could relate to. So Margaret Sanger, I think, took advantage of that a lot because the whole society was very vulnerable to that approach. And really, for almost a century with Margaret Sanger, we've gone down this path. And if anything, we've proven to ourselves that it's the wrong path, that it's been strewn with these reproductive victims and these sexual victims. And for people to say that that has not occurred or to deny it or to look the other way or whatever, they just have their head in the sand. People are being hurt because of this. And I mean really hurt, not superficially hurt. They're in agony emotionally, psychologically, sometimes physically, spiritually for certain, even intellectually and creatively. They get hurt by these relationships that are only cemented on the basis of a physical relationship.
And that's why, Chris, too, the birth control pill, which Margaret Sanger was all for, about controlling one's fertility, that's what really has allowed for this cementing, if you will, of our view of sexuality, which is genitally focused. In other words, with the wide availability of the birth control pill, condoms, seasonal, you name it, couples can have these very casual relationships where guys aren't committed and women are trying to get to know different guys. And it's just allowed for this genitality to really be ingrained in how we look at relationships and how we build our relationships. And I'm quite alarmed. We've been involved with this for a long time. But to see how younger and younger kids, the junior high level, even grade school, are buying into this, and this is what they're being told. We can tell them, say no to drugs, but when it comes to sex, boy, they're not going to be able to say no. So we got to get them on the birth control pill really young. I mean, I'm just appalled by that. And so it's very, very scary to see younger and younger children, younger girls, younger boys, thinking that's how they're supposed to be in their sexuality, focusing on the physical. It's very, very destructive.
It's amazing to me, too, that the more freedom that we seem to have demanded, that somehow if we are freer in this area, we will be happier, that in subsequent generations, the demand, well, I need more. I'm going to need this. I need to have a patch. I need to have to make me free and to make me happy. Well, I need to have a genital herpes medicine so that I can't pass it on to the next person.
That's right.
I mean, it just seems the more freedom we get, the more trapped we are.
Well, because we're not accepting any responsibility. Freedom doesn't come without any responsibility or self-accountability. It has to be there to be truly free. And that's why this mind-body approach to sexuality is so freeing for couples, because women don't have to believe like, well, I'm on the pill, so that means I'm available for sex any night of the week, any night of the month for my husband. A woman doesn't want to feel like she's on demand as a wife.
Or an object.
Or an object, absolutely. And that's why with our work with fertility care and everything that we do to help couples understand their fertility, we also help them understand how their sexuality should be. And that's what's so liberating for these couples, because we are actually giving them really what the church has been teaching, and especially with John Paul II, with the theology of the body. We've just been breaking it down practically for couples, Chris, so that they know how, for instance, they can use a natural system of fertility regulation and not be all hung up in abstinence, you know, that negative word. Oh, you know, you have to follow abstinence. Well, we don't even use that word when we talk to couples, do we, Tom? Mm. We don't even talk about abstinence. Maybe you just want to take off on that and how what we give to couples is so liberating for them in the true sense of their sexuality.
Well, because abstinence isn't what this is all about. Abstinence isn't unique to a natural method. We did talk about this a little bit the other day, that there's a sort of misguided, I think, really, notion that a natural method is really periodic abstinence, and but it isn't. It's periodic intercourse, but it's choice intercourse. It's selective intercourse. It's intercourse choosing the best time in the cycle to have that intercourse, whether you want to have a baby, don't want to have a baby, whatever the situation might be, but always selecting the best time for that couple to have intercourse. So the focus is really on intercourse. It's not on abstinence. I mean, after all, women on birth control pills, men who court women on birth control pills, all of these different contraceptive methods, if the woman's sterilized, the man is sterilized, it doesn't make any difference. They still lead their life in an abstinent condition for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So abstinence is not at all unique to a natural method.
We'll return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers in just a moment. A teaching of St. Paul from his first letter to the Thessalonians. We exhort you, brethren, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with them all. See that none of you repays evil for evil, but always seek to do good to one another and to all. Rejoice always. Pray constantly. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you.
This is the Pope Paul VI Institute Minute with Dr. Tom Hilgers.
On August 6, 1978, Pope Paul VI died. This was the Feast of the Transfiguration. After Mass that day, my wife Sue and I agreed that we needed to build a lasting memorial to Pope Paul VI and his encyclical letter, Humanae Vitae. It wasn't until 1985 that we were able to really open the doors of this Pope Paul VI Institute for the study of human reproduction. The Institute is now the home of the Creighton Model System, which is a moral means and an extremely accurate means for fertility regulation, unlike the old rhythm method. The Institute is the home of Napro technology. It is a home of science at the service of the human person. Until next time, I'm Dr. Tom Hilgers.
For a complimentary gift and more information on the Pope Paul VI Institute, log on to www.popepaulvi6.com. Spirit Catholic Radio presents Faith Check. Here's Greg Ewell.
Many scoff at the church's precepts and rules and can't fathom how a relationship with the church could affect our relationship with Christ. Let us remember that the high priests of Israel, due to their office, could inquire of the Lord, and recall Caiaphas' prophecy about Jesus' mission, which John 11 states was not said of his own accord, but in virtue of his being high priest that year. Our Lord upheld the legitimacy of the teaching office when he said in Matthew 23, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat, so practice and observe whatever they tell you, though he quickly warned not to follow their bad example. Jesus commissioned his apostles to be the leaders of his church. He told them, "As the Father sent me, so I send you. And he who hears you, hears me. And he who rejects you, rejects me." The popes and bishops of the Catholic Church succeed the apostles in their teaching office, and it is they who over the centuries have passed on the faith to us through the creeds, church councils, even Scripture itself. We are called to accept the Church's teachings with joy, knowing that the Church is a good mother who desires our eternal happiness. And after all, who could reject his own mother? This is Greg Ewell for Faith Check.
We now return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. This really, when you use a cybercentric, allowing your soul, you really can enter into a heart-mind relationship with your spouse as opposed to just something that satisfies you or gratifies you physically.
We like to say, sort of tongue-in-cheek, that you should have intercourse 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, rather than two or three times a week or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And people get, they wonder, what are you talking about? You got to be crazy. But mm-hmm. but you're not crazy, because if you really understand your sexuality and you accept your own maleness and your own femaleness and you accept the spouse's maleness and female, you do in fact have intercourse, not physical perhaps, but a mental form of intercourse, a spiritual form of intercourse. Intercourse is an exchange between people. It's a sharing between people. And it's not limited to just the physical aspects. And when you do limit it, you enslave yourself to it. And, you know, this Playboy mentality that we've lived at for the last 50 years, lived under for the last 50 years, it claims that there are no victims. Everybody's, you know, happy, happy, happy about all of this. It has been so seductively unreal. Maybe that's not quite the right way to say it, but it's fraudulent. Maybe that's a better way to call it. It's utter fraud to be able to say to people that there have been no victims to this, or that nobody gets hurt, or that it's all just some puritanical church trying to teach us so they can, you know, keep us under control or whatever. It hasn't been that ever, and it's not that way now. And the only big gap we have is that we've allowed these people to take control of this sort of market, if you will, of sexuality, and we're sitting back letting it happen. And we've got to stop that. We have to get beyond that. If you just think about the abortion issue as a single issue, for example, it all comes as a result of a distorted and dysfunctional view of human sexuality. So if we don't eventually get to a better understanding of human sexuality, we'll never solve issues like abortion.
And it's really a falsehood to say that the church does not support a loving relationship between a man and a wife, a male and a female, that does not have a component of not just that mutual agape type of love, but also it embraces the erotic love where God is present in all these things. It's not as though the church does not recognize this. What they do is they call us to come together, allow God to be a part of it, and lift it up even higher into something that is really mutually self-giving.
Yeah, well, it's true. It is very much so, and also mutually accepting of each other. And but you're quite right. The church has never taught that, never been antagonistic to that, although some people viewed it that way. And I suppose you could interpret certain things perhaps as being something like that. But in all of my lifetime of looking at what the church has taught, I've never sensed that ever. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know why it is that I always saw it differently, but mm-hmm. I never sensed it that way at all.
Well, it goes back to that bill of goods that's been sold to women, that you need to be free. And it's that misinterpretation of the passage from Paul, which calls women to be submissive to their husbands. However, it also says that men are to be Christ-like to their wives. And what did Christ do? He sacrificed his life. Mm-hmm. He gave ultimately. And so, but women have been bought into this where you need to be in control. You need to be in charge. And all it has done is it has hurt women.
And it's also hurt men, too. Mm-hmm. You know, and men need to be lifted up. Because men, what we find in our work, Chris, is that when men are asked to step up to the plate to support their wives in learning about their fertility, for instance, and also and avoiding genital contact during a time when they could get pregnant, and that's not their intention, become pregnant, These men can be so caring and so loving and so supportive. And we are truly impressed with how men then are looked at differently. You know, they've been pretty much maligned over the years by the women's movement. You know, like the men, they're our problem. You know, they're trying to keep us enslaved and, you know, yada, yada, yada. But you know what? We have to help men appreciate their true masculinity as well. And that's all based on a respect, women to men and men to women. You know, that you talked about the church, and truly the church really wants the best for us. And what the church views, and John Paul II talked about this and wrote about it extensively, but truly when we talk about sexuality, as Tom mentioned, everything about us is sexual. And if we're looking at a man-woman relationship, we have to look at the other person as a gift. You know, we don't control it, we don't own it, we don't use it, we don't abuse it. We accept that person as gift. And the favor should be returned. And when you look at somebody as gift, you're not going to take advantage of them. And you're going to appreciate everything about that person. And so it's just such a revolutionary way to look at our sexuality, the total person. Getting to know the total person. I tell you what, when these young teenage kids and these couples there who live together before marriage, for instance, they're not coming to understand and learn about who that other person is, because when you default to physical genitality, if you will, too soon, it aborts that process to really get to know that other person. You just automatically go to bed because you're upset with them. Well, this is going to solve the problem. When you don't do that, when you focus on the total person, by George, you're going to get to know that other person and who they are. And maybe that's not the person you want to spend the rest of your life with. Why do we have so many divorces? Maybe because people are prematurely getting into relationships. They're aborting that process. They're focusing on the physical. They're not getting to know the other. They get married. Voila. Hey, I didn't know you were really like that. You know, I'm not sure I like you. You know?
And then when a hardship does befall the couple, or if there is something that happens, you wonder why there isn't that commitment of mind and heart, because you haven't nurtured that, and it's so easily torn asunder.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're not in there for the long haul. And actually, what's so exciting, too, a great byproduct is that the other person, they become better as a human being because you are loving and accepting them unconditionally, and because the commitment's there. And then the reverse is true. So actually those little things like I may not like about my husband that irritate me, I must say after all these years of marriage, because we have that commitment, wow, I see him growing in even more loving ways. And I hope he says the same thing about me. It's like, but without that commitment, there's no opportunity to help the other one grow and become better. And vice versa. And that's what that commitment is absolutely all about.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a word that's gotten a bum rap. It's called being chaste in a relationship, even in marriage.
Yeah.
And chastity is, again, not about abstinence as much as it's about caring about the other.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. And just as a P.S., a practical P.S., Chris, when we teach our couples in using this system, when they want to use it to avoid pregnancy, and it's a time of fertility, and the couple's aware of that, they avoid genital contact, but they don't avoid sexual contact. And sexual contact, we use the acronym SPICE, spiritual, physical, intellectual, creative, emotional. We want them to continue to be sexual to each other. As Tom pointed out, you know, emotional intercourse, intellectual intercourse. You know, intercourse is a very dramatic way to express one's love, but there are many other dynamic ways. When we look at the emotional connection, the spiritual connection, and women want that. They want to be loved for who they are, not just for what they can do in bed. And this is so freeing for couples. Okay, we have to avoid genital contact, but you know what? The sexual contact continues during that time. And that's how we practically break it down for couples. And they respond, don't they, Tom? They get it. But the culture isn't teaching this. So without any insight on this, they just, you know, why would we use a natural method? It's, we have to abstain. But it's so much more than that. It's so much more than that.
It sounds beautiful.
Yeah, well, the culture, teaches a sort of a pleasure shortcut. Everybody takes the pleasure shortcut. And then they don't develop their relationship on all these other elements and all these other dimensions. And again, you just don't build strong relationships doing that. You mentioned earlier about how we want more and more. All you gotta do is watch television or a little bit of this or a little bit of that, and you'll see, this act of pleasure doesn't doesn't suffice. So they have to do something else, some other act of pleasure. That's why books like Having Intercourse in 14,000 Different Positions, you know, and how it'll improve your pleasure.
Even with animals.
Or you see see these condoms that advertise, you know, that certain types of condoms are more pleasurable or something. Well, it's just this insatiable thirst to find what I like to call the great orgasm in the sky.
Oh, my.
You know, but that's not what human relationships are really about. The fundamental bonding of those relationships has to be on a much more broad base, and that's very sexual. It is very sexual, but it's much more than just physical. Now, the physical part is part of it, but the other components, if you short-circuit it, if you take the pleasure shortcut, so to speak, you know, when you get to a difficulty in your marriage, which we see more and more, you again read the divorce court thing in the newspaper, you know, 5 years, 3 years, 6 years, 10 years, whatever it is, every relationship has its own sort of turning point, but boom, it's cut off and it's done, it's over with, because they've never laid the groundwork, they've never paved the way for this. And I don't know, it seems almost impossible to have a sort of a true sexual revolution, when you look at our current culture and how just totally genitocentric it is. And yet, when we teach the couples that we're working with these concepts, we're always amazed at how they relate almost intuitively to them. And so I think in a way the chance to having a real sexual, we like to say the sexual revolution hasn't really begun yet. And so when the real revolution starts, you'll be able to recognize it and you'll see good things coming from it, which you said earlier. When you see a revolution, you think of good things happening. Right. Well, this hasn't been a revolution. This has been just the opposite. This is like, you know, all these.
It's been more like the French Revolution than the American Revolution.
There
you go. I'm looking forward to the day when we all understand the cerebrocentric application to our lives and to our relationships, and to see that I think the heart longs for love, not pleasure.
Yeah.
Ultimately,
yes.
Don't we long for love?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So hopefully we'll be learning more and more over the next few weeks, and be able to grow in just the beauty of what the church has to teach us. Thanks to you, Dr. Thomas Hilgers, and to you, Susan Hilgers, for being here today.
Oh, well, thank you, Chris. It's always wonderful. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. To learn more about the work of Dr. Hilgers and the Pope Paul VI Institute, go to popepaulvi.com. This has been a production of DiscerningHearts.com, Spirit Catholic Radio, and the Pope Paul VI Institute. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers.